Greetings, friends, and welcome to the GrogPod Roguelike Podcast, where we slay some roguelike games, summon some numerical ratings upon it, and if it's resurrected by a talking whale at the end of the season, we revisit it for our end-of-year recap tournament. I am your star-born royal host of the podcast, Scott Berger, and with me are my expendable minion co-hosts.
Expendable minions, I don't know about that, but this is Will Wright, your forged sword of the stars, ready to lay down a million damage.
And this is Colin, a ritual cultist who gains plus one strength every podcast episode.
And lastly, it's me, Andrew Nuke the Whales Harshman.
Well, if you're listening to this episode and you didn't hit that fast forward 30-second button like you normally do, because I have a wild random assortment of jazz music that has been sitting in as a placeholder for some kind of coherent theme. Well, after about 4 years of podcasting, we did it. Mission accomplished, everybody. We finally have a podcast theme song. But not just developed by anybody, developed by one Luis Clemente, or Luis Clemente, who you might know as the composer to one Balatro. You can find him on all the social things at Luis F on kind of everywhere. I'll link his website too in the episode description. But I've been working with him for a while on something of like, you know what, this po like our podcast, we've been doing it long enough. Feels like it needs like a real thing to it, and he was very patient with all of my back and forth requests, and making sure that it passed co-host muster as well. But we got not just one theme, but a whole bunch of variations on a theme. He was kind enough to develop kind of a whole suite for us. So in classic roguelike fashion, we'll be kind of randomizing between them every so often, just enough for you to get used to one theme. We're gonna rug pull and switch it out on you every so often, just to keep the gameplay fresh, as they say. But yeah, moving on, our biggest episode, maybe since our last biggest episode, this week we are talking Slay the Spire 2. Ever heard of it? Released a whopping 22 days ago, as of our recording here on March 27th, released on March 5th, 2026. And you could have found it on Steam if you were trying, because that's the only storefront that went down when it launched. unlike on the what was it a Silk Song that took down basically every shop simultaneously. But the Silk Song effect this year is real. We'll Slay the Spire 2 taking Steam down when it released. Published and developed by our friends Megacrit out here in the Seattle area. Who, as we all know, I don't even know why I'm reading through this. We all know, Slay the Spire 1, their other game that they have developed, which released in early access November 2017 and 1.0'd January 2019. So far, Slay the Spire 2, less than a month after release, is already the number 27th all-timer on Steam with 93,232 total reviews. Your average player of Slay the Spire 2 so far has about 44 hours of gameplay in it, which, whew, I'm glad that I finally made the average mark for one of these recordings.
Rookie
But
numbers.
I know, unfortunate. Well, the top end of the distribution here for Slay the Spire 2, 107. No, I guess it's technically 108 hours. But compared to Slay the Spire 1, the average player time was like 129 hours. And the top end for that was like 1,300
When
hours,
you
it
say
looks
top,
like.
yeah,
What
but
do you
as
mean?
a percentage of your time that you've spent since the game has been out.
True, yeah. But all that's well and good. But Will, you have the task of giving us the one sentence description of what one in Slay the Spire 2.
I mean, it's really easy to do this. The short sentence is not as interesting, but the short sentence is it's a masterpiece. It's this is the GGOAT. It's the greatest game of all time. This is a game that is Slay the Spire 1, but just amped up in every single way with nothing That's a negative. It's just more content. It's more characters. More story. It's more interesting gameplay. The enemies are all challenging. Like more archetypes. There's more cards. Oh my goodness! I'm 122 hours into the game, and I'm still seeing enemies and
House.
cards I have never seen before. So this game, I mean, masterpiece. Absolutely, just complete masterpiece.
Now, we should put an early access disclaimer here up front, because as when people are listening to this 10,000 years from now, and all this, this radio wave has been shot into space, they're gonna be saying, well, but now Slay the Spire 2 is out in 1.0, and all of these critiques and things that we're all lobbying on it are already completely out of date. And I feel like that's fine. I think like there's kind of a sense that I have in the back of my mind that like maybe when this game comes out for 1.0, like maybe we'll take a revisit lap on it, because I'm sure like at that point there will be like so much more stuff, and we'll get to it in a minute, but a lot more content. It might be also fun to kind of bundle it with, like, I don't know, Slay the Spire 1 Downfall, maybe. And yeah, I think like if the Steam page from Slay the Spire 1 is to be believed, like the early access period for the first game taking like 1 to 2 years, there's kind of a long road ahead of this one. And some previous early access games that we've covered have kind of been a little all over the place in terms of what early access means, because like some of them, like Cogmind or Project Zomboid, are like they're like the game is basically done, it's been in early access for like 10 plus years. Other ones like Darkest Dungeon 2, we reviewed like boom right when it came out, early access, very fresh. Or like Lone Star was another real fresh one that we picked. But that be I think all that being said, like for an early access game that we're playing like 20 days after release, I feel like this game is really polished.
For sure, for sure. And actually, this is also a early access podcast episode. So everything that you're hearing today is, not indicative of the final product. A lot of things could change. A host could be modified, swapped out. You might come back and listen to this in 6 months, and we'll have like a random guest on, or maybe all the guests. Who knows? But
AI
be
Harshman, AI
AI
Andrew.
harsh. Absolutely. And rest assured though that this is all in-game audio. This is not a pre-rendered podcast. So it is this is just something that we're refining, and it'll be just getting better and better over the coming years.
Yeah, so I mean, a kind of a theme for this season is sequelitis, and we talked about Monster Train 2 a few episodes ago, where that game just kind of felt like a glorified DLC. I feel like similar art style, similar animation, basically gameplay flow is kind of the same. And then I think
Kind of the
like,
same.
and at least for me, like the cherry on top of like, oh, all of your favorite clans are back and everything, but it's literally just the exact same art. I was a little miffed about. And so one thing that I was a little skeptical of, like, okay, Slay the Spire 2 is coming out. Is it like how Monster Train 2 is it gonna be? And I'm happy to report, like, I think as the resident Spire skeptic here, I think, like I was kind of blown away, like playing this game the first time, where I'm like, whoa, like the art, animation, all of like the new stuff that they have going, like there's so much more interesting stuff going on here that, yeah, like I can totally understand like why this game would crash Steam when Slay the Spire 2 came out, but Monster Train 2 didn't.
It feels like this is the game that Slay the Spire 1 was trying to be and had like limitations of time and engine. And now it's like, all right, a second attempt at making the perfect deck building game.
Limitations of time and engine. Yeah, now that they've cast off the shackles of the Unity engine, the despicable
Well, I mean, or
Unity
maybe not
engine,
engine, but like
the
coding.
corpos running that.
Once
No,
more.
I hear you, but I did want to jump in and remind everybody that they did a whole engine switcheroo. They jumped ship
Oh, that's
onto
right.
the
I forgot about that. Yeah, they did
Godot,
actually
right?
switch engines.
Onto the good ship, the good pirate-free vessel of Gatto.
Gatto? What's the
And
pronunciation on this?
I believe
believe I believe
it's definitely
well,
Godot, right? As
Godot.
read, I'm sure someone's Googling it right now, but I think as read it look I believe I've heard it pronounced as Godot,
Yeah, I
but
mean, it's.
I think also Megacrit made a fork of it for their own internal purposes to like change up this and that about the engine, and They changed it from GODOT to like Mega DOT. So like Mega Dot or Mega Dough.
Mega dough, that's awesome. Love that,
Certainly
love that.
raking in the dough with the sales, but they
Now, Scott, you said you were blown away by this, that, and the other. Then you said all the new things. Now, I haven't played Slay the Spire one since the episode that we did on it, which was a
Heresy.
while ago. What new things?
I mean, I think there's the main kind of things that immediately stand out. Like, if you are someone who's just like, oh, yeah, I played Slay the Spire once, like 10 years ago, or whatever. The two major things that stand out to me are two, like, completely new characters and completely new mechanics associated with them. And four-player co-op. And I think that like those two things just by themselves warrant this to be like a very new and interesting experience. Like in theory, like if just those things were added into Slay the Spire 1, like that would be amazing. Like that would be really cool. But you know, those are kind of the leading things. But you know, you also have like every enemy in the game is different. You have like every like the three act structure of the game is different, and there's, you know, again, like most of this is not really in there yet, but the first act of the game has an alternate act that sometimes you can roll. That I my sense of that is that like each act will have like an A and B side to it. So
Yeah,
right now it's
that's my
just like
guess too.
Act 1 A, Act 1 B, Act 2 only A right now, Act 3 only A kind of thing. And
And they're
crucially,
completely different enemies in them.
completely different enemies, completely different elites, completely different bosses. All of like the gimmicks associated with them are totally different. Yeah, I'm sure like Will has way more detail, but yeah, I think those are kind of the things to me that stand out immediately is like, well, it's just Slay the Spire 1, right?
We got the you got the ancients in there. You got the special full size, like the art on the cards where it's like full size for the super special cards that you can get. All I think the animations and lining up the sound with the animations. I don't know if you experienced this and were blown away by it, but like when you're fighting that boss with the dangly tail that sits above your head that smashes down on you know what I'm talking about, the inky sort of thing. Like as soon as it comes down, the music lines up to like change right at that moment, no matter what. And that's true for like when you blow open that like weird thing with the parasites inside. As soon as you break it open, the sound changes. And so they've done a really good job of integrating the sound into everything. All the animations are super tight. All the art is brand new, even on the cards they had before, unlike Monster Train. So it just feels like the quality around just like every single aspect of the game has been improved. And even
That's
the
how,
small, like, oh, go ahead.
yeah, that's how good the game is that Will bothered to listen to the music. Usually he just mutes it. But that is impressive. I had not picked up on the fact that there are parts of the soundtrack that are dynamic and based on the gameplay. And I haven't encountered any of these borderless super duper special cards yet. That
You
sounds
get
pretty exciting.
the one of the options for like the first card or the Niao the whale draw thing at the very beginning gives you the like Niao's vengeance or something.
Yeah,
Oh
so
yes, that's right. So I did see it, but I did not actually take in the artwork and appreciate
yeah,
how
they're
unique
doing
and special it was.
Magic the Gathering style, like, oh, you know it's a fun special card because it doesn't have anything else on it except for the art.
For sure, for sure, for sure. Borderless special. How exciting. Well, something that I clocked as being new, at least I hope it's new and I didn't just forget from in the first one, is that in addition to Neome, the resurrecting whale mother, your mysterious benefactor who keeps bringing you back to ascend the spire, there are now new characters, new
Ancients, he's reading.
demigod ancients. Oh, pardon me. Okay, that's what you were referring to
Like you
earlier.
didn't even read the entire timeline from beginning to end to understand all the lore. Oh my goodness.
I know. I'm gonna actually drop off and so I can go read that. But all of those new characters are, in addition to, it's fun to, make it to a new part of the game. and be like, oh wow, I've gotten further than, in a run than I've ever gotten before. Unless you're like my co-hosts who beat this game their first try with one hand behind their back and, you know, blindfolded. It's exciting. It's one thing to encounter new obstacles and to be excited by, oh, this is a new enemy or what have you, or they have a new technique or AI behavior. But it's another thing and another type of fun excitement to encounter a new friendly NPC. And joining the ranks of the giant space whale Neom, we have Tanks the Chimera King. He's great. We have the melted dragon. A melting dragon? Come on. there is this like wild looking like half witch, half scarecrow character. Tezcatera? Tezcatera? Scatter, I don't know about that. That's a different character. But and you've got all these great new characters and boons. And I'm trying to remember in Slay the Spire 1, at the beginning of each act, did you get a boon of some kind? Or is that also a new mechanic?
Well, the way they did it was they basically separate, like after you beat an elite previously, what would happen is that you would get the card selection, and then it would go into like the boss relic. And so they kind of integrated that all into the rewards of that boss. And so the next part, the first node that you would go to in the next act would be an event or an enemy of some sort.
Gotcha.
So this is all integrated into a centralized point, which I think it's a great design. Love it. You get more characters, and that helps with the story too, because the story is still a work in progress, from what I can tell, especially with a lot of the art still in beta and a lot of the mystery still unknown. Who is the architect? What is their goal? Can you actually defeat them? So in Slay the Spire 1, you can kill the heart. That, you know, that's the fourth act, big bad thing. But now we are unable to do that. Or at least I am unable to do that. Maybe you have to A10 all of the, that's the Ascension 10, the highest level of difficulty for all the characters. Maybe that's the case before you can actually do that. It doesn't seem like that should be the case. But so far, you cannot kill the architect as far as I know.
It definitely feels like that's one of those things where like it's coming. It definitely feels like that the Act 4 equivalent for this game is like, it's not there yet. That's fine. The game is 20 days old. Give it another 2 years, and I'm sure they'll have something new and interesting and different associated with that. But yeah, like the kind of story beat thing is another new aspect, where in the first one, it's just like, I don't know, it's like maybe very subtly hinted or just kind of in the background. It's not really a big deal. This one, it's also like not quite a big deal, but it's nice. It's a good nice to have of like, oh, you know, like as you are progressing through the game, you will just unlock things by like, oh, you know, you beat five bosses or whatever, and then you unlock this new little art piece that has like some nice little like story beat dialogue to it, and you know, you get like what, you know, new cards and relics and whatever added to your pool, but it's like pieced together sort of randomly, which I think is an interesting touch where it doesn't do it chronologically. It's like, oh, like it's filling in details over here and details over here. I could totally see it being like it's building up this narrative, and then like this one piece is missing, and then you fill in that one piece, and oh my god, it turns out the resurrecting space whale the whole time, like she was the bad guy really, and or something like that. Like I could definitely see something like that up their sleeve. It leaves a lot of room for interesting potential. And while I'm not nearly skilled enough to have beaten like 15 bosses with the Regent or Necrobinder quite yet, it does give me like a goal to reach for of like, okay, like this is like the next thing that I should do instead of just like trying to grind out one victory with the Silent that has still yet eluded me because I'm horribly bad at this game.
Well, and like it's basically achievements, but you get a little bit of something for it without having to be like, you're not locking actual gameplay content behind achievements. You're just locking like little story snippets, and like you could absolutely play all of this game without even looking at like there's no play downside to not knowing the story.
Well, what gates
they're all sorts of stuff. They've got, if you hover over the ones you have unlocked, it'll show you what the opening conditions are.
I know a lot of it is just like, you know, points essentially, or just like, that's which is basically time playing in a sense. And whereas
But it
other ones,
doesn't.
I can't recall. But like, I think that actually, if I was going to give them any advice, make that more interesting. Make the unlocks a little bit
You're already
more.
unlocking cards with the points. So yeah, why do you need the that? But
Yeah, the
eh.
cards shouldn't. Yeah, well,
I get the
I have some
feeling.
critiques, but you
I
know.
mean, there's some of the events that are the epochs or whatever, the story cards you get, it's literally like coming soon.
Yeah.
So obviously that's not done yet. I
Well,
would not
because
be surprised if they rejigger the story, if they change how the events are presented.
well, some of them I think are just like gated behind, like, beat Act One with Ironclad, or beat Act Three with the defect. And like, if like Act 2B is not in the game yet, then yeah, I mean, like, you would probably have to get that sorted first before putting that little placeholder art in there or something. But
Yeah.
yeah, I think like
Well, I like it. I think it's a good way in a rogue game that is run, well, I mean, most of these are run-based, but in a run-based game, having storyline drops in between runs is a great idea, and I think
But what
it's
do you think
groovy.
is the ideal way of triggering unlocks? Like, in any of these roguelikes, like, the one is just like accumulated experience. Another is like, oh, you beat a boss with a character, or you beat some level. But then you might have other ones, which is like, oh, you beat this enemy without taking any damage, or you didn't use any block while facing the enemy, which you would normally block a lot for. Or like, just sort of like little challenges within each combat
I
to
mean,
make
they're
it so you
just—it's
have sub goals.
achievements.
Yeah, but like, if you have achievements gating like unlocks, then suddenly those become interesting things to aim for, as opposed to just beat the game.
It's—I feel
So.
like it's almost like the content that's in the game should just be gated by like laughably easy stuff that like you just get just kind of like by either playing the game or like beat Act One with the Ironclad. Like,
I mean, all
you.
the card unlocks are that. It's just
Yeah.
score, which you accumulate regardless. You could never beat Act One and still eventually unlock all the content.
I
Just
think
would be exponentially slower.
other ways to do it that we've seen in the past, like Slice and Dice has like, 5,000 achievements, but they're all like extremely easy, sometimes like very niche to get, like, oh, use the statue to deal like, 200 damage or whatever. And like, the thing, you unlock like one item that, could be good, could be bad, but it's not like you're hinging your entire gameplay experience on that. It's a very like niche esoteric thing. Whereas here, I feel like Slay the Spire to me has always kind of felt like such a finely tuned engine. Not to say the Slay or the, that Slice and Dice is not, but just Slice and Dice just has like a bazillion more things in it that you would maybe never even see, and like, you'd be fine to totally miss out on it. But Slay the Spire feels like it's like everything needs to be at your fingertips to like successfully engage with the game, and any part of that that you're gating behind some kind of like, oh, yep, in order to unlock this one relic that like really opens up the play space of the game, you got to beat Ascension 10 with every character. Like, that doesn't seem feasible or like a good
Well, yeah,
idea.
you don't put the most, like, the things that you need as the staples for a build in like an unlock that's hard. But like, for instance, like, so if you have like an achievement, which might be something like play 20 cards in one turn, and then like the result of that is like you get the thing that helps you play 20 cards in one turn, which is maybe like, I don't know, either energy or draw or combination of those. That, I don't know, it feels like is a cool dynamic. Like, it's a nice to have. It's certainly not a requirement, but like, you might put like a A tier and not an S tier sort of an item, or a part of a relic or whatever behind that. It seems to me like that might be fun, but
Something
it's.
that kind of themes and like pulls you towards that archetype that is like, oh, hey, by the
You get
way, they're here.
rewarded for doing the thing that like you're trying, if you're trying to go infinite, like, this is like a reward for like trying to do, or like getting really into a specific archetype.
Well, when I have enough binders full of notes written down to figure out how to go infinite and how to beat the game with all the characters, I'll let you know.
What, sorry, what is go infinite?
If you have Your deck
He
built in such a way
laughs.
that
What do you
you can
want from
just
me?
keep.
I played this game for 14.4 hours and I
Like,
completed
so
one run, which
an
was
infinite
terribly
deck would
disappointing,
be.
by the way. I didn't even know I was on the final boss. So just goes to show how good the final combat is, current state of the game. Sorry, what's that called?
I mean, you could, if you've got one of the like the exhaust builds or something, you could have something where your deck cycles every, like, you cycle through your deck. And then you cycle through it again, and you just keep going over and over and over again. And like, you maybe have all zero energy cards, and you can just keep cycling and a zero draw card. You just cycle
Oh,
it
I
over and
see.
over again until the thing dies.
Well,
I've only done it like two or three times in Slay the Spire 1, but it felt amazing when I did.
I unwittingly was attempting something similar for far too long. For like 8 hours of this game, I was trying to make a what is it, Hellraiser? I was trying to make a Hellraiser build work. And I'm like, yo, I'm gonna get so many awesome strike cards. I'm gonna delete everything else, and I'm just gonna be striking up a storm. And this card would not appear for me. I was searching for this card for like 4 or 5 hours, and
Yeah, force it, man. You gotta go with the
when it
flow.
finally, I realized, yes, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. The fun of this game is more. This is a theme that's come up with a lot of games that we've covered, but it's very pronounced in Slay the Spire that the point is to try to develop a strategy on the go based on the beginning of your run. And but anyway, okay, that's going infinite. Isn't there like a Scientology documentary called that? No, that's
So,
going clear, I believe.
I have a
So
question. I have
yes.
that I think Will is probably best poised to answer here. Colin also, certainly more than me, that like before we jump into the new stuff, I kind of want to like take a step back of like how the old things have changed here, because we have three of our old four characters returning. We got our trusty ironclad strength build, letting out your own blood to fuel your engine kind of thing. Your attack mode. You got Silent, the poison lady, who uses lots of
Assassin,
fly
poison
discard.
assassin. Yes. You got your robot defect, who I think people were very worried was not going to show up, and then at the
I
11th
was.
hour came back in. And for
And
the
he's a
most,
thick boy now.
he be beefing. Yeah,
He beefed up.
he beefed up. He's been going to the gym. He deleted Facebook, as everyone should. And like these three characters kind of retain, for the most part, like their core identities of how they've played from the first game, with some minor tweaks that I don't know. Like I think that, at least for me, like in Slay the Spire 1, the Silent felt like my go-to character, Defect and then Ironclad last. And in this one, I don't know, like did the subtle tweaks just like totally break my brain? It feels like the way to play Silent in Slay the Spire 2 feels like maybe not totally different, but that there are, for these returning characters, maybe some like archetype tweaks that have changed things in a new way that people are still learning. Is that true?
I mean, absolutely. Speedster, a power that you get as Silent, is one where as you draw cards, you do damage to all enemies. So you're like highly incentivized to get lots of card draw. And so it becomes this thing where it's like, well, all you really want to do is just do card draw, get as many of these powers as possible, and then you just defeat everything by just drawing continuously. And that's something that didn't exist before. They had like a there's a another archetype, which is Sly, which is like in the Venn diagram of these archetypes, there's a lot of overlap between those two. And so you'll draw a lot, and then you'll discard something that gives you more energy or more draw or something. And so there's a lot of like these interesting new synergies that are introduced. I'd say that like for each one of them, there's probably at least one major new archetype and like two, three, four, many other minor archetypes introduced. And not all of them are great. Some are not so great. And a lot of the cards they introduced are shit. But you know, they all that you have to have shit cards. Like you can't have them all be S tier. And so it's very interesting, in my opinion, to like suss out like what's actually good and what's not good by just playing it a bunch of times and just kind of
Well,
figuring out.
and also, this is where I expect the most change from it being an early access comes from. Like, you can You could, they could have had the whole story done, but knowing how people are going to break the game and how to balance that is something that is harder to figure out on your own if you're just a couple. I think there's only like four people, 4 or 5 people in their studio, so like they're just see, they've already like they made some change that extremely upset the like Chinese Slay the Spire community, and they review bombed it because they are not allowed to actually comment on Steam. But like, I wouldn't be surprised if that happens a couple of times where
Ooh,
they
but
like
what happened? You
truly
want to know? I have the
rebalance the
details.
game.
I have the details around that drama if you want to know.
If it's
Yeah,
interesting.
what was the card? What did they do?
So for Ironclad and Silent, it was really easy to, or specifically for Ironclad, it was really easy to infinite. In fact, every single run on eight, the highest level of difficulty, you could essentially morph your deck into something that would infinite every single time. And within the Chinese market, it's become this thing where it's like competitive to like win every single time and like to minimize the time play. It's very like just like maximize win rate. And this is it's because there's one way to do that, and because it's reliable, everyone was doing that. And that was just like great. And as soon as you removed, like they basically nerfed some of the cards there to make it harder to do that, everyone, that whole group was getting very upset because it took away from this reliable win, which is not, in my opinion, not a fun thing. You don't want to have one build you're always going for. You want it to always be,
Despicable.
yeah,
I'm
it's
changing my ranking
despicable.
right now. This is outrageous. Mega crit. More like mega. I don't know. Not so good. That's interesting. That's interesting. Colin, I think you're absolutely right. We're probably going to see a fair amount of that, especially with so many people playing this game.
Yeah, I mean, if they
And
find a
yeah,
card that just no one has ever played.
and especially because like the only like area that this game is being sold through right now is Steam. Like if you've had the like Slay the Spire 1 out and like perfectly balanced and everything for like a decade, and people have been playing on mobile, they've been playing on iPads, they've been playing on the Switch. Slay the Spire 2 comes, their favorite game of all time comes out, but it's on PC, I guess. And then you see that first balance patch come through the beta branch, not even through the main branch yet.
Yeah, you guys are on the beta branches, right? Just to be,
No.
what the?
No. I
Not, you guys are not true fans. This is really, it's ridiculous.
I
mean, I'm already
needed.
back to playing Factorio, so
Yeah, there you go.
Jesus.
I needed the most widely available consumer facing version, so that way when I'm talking about it, like the 10 million listeners that download the podcast will be able to be like, yep, that was the exact experience that I had. None of this beta branch nonsense for a 20-year-old game. I mean, come on.
All right, I'm on the beta branch now, Will.
Now we can play together because that was going to stop us from, because we were playing together before.
That wasn't what's going to stop us. Can
Yeah,
we
because
let's talk about the
multiplayer is not,
multiplayer.
it's not as
Yeah.
good as single, but well, we can go into that, but
All right. So major feature, maybe the majorest feature of this game is 4-player co-op. And I think it was maybe like subtly hinted at, and Colin, I think you slam dunked it when you said like, oh, well, the Slay the Spire board game was just like the beta test for Slay the Spire 2 co-op, which when so I played the Slay the Spire 1 board game at PAX, gosh, was it not last year, 2024. And I interviewed some of the people I was playing with at the time for that. So go and check out that PAX West interview that I think that's the winter special from 2024. Anyway, Colin, you've played the board game
yeah, I
a
played
lot
it
more than just
like a month
once.
ago.
Yeah. And like from a tabletop experience, like my experience was like, yeah, okay, it's Slay the Spire. It feels a lot longer. Because it's just like, all right, I'm gonna take this energy from here, I'm gonna put it over there and do this thing. And
Yeah.
you have
It's
everyone kind
also
of.
significantly simpler than Slay the Spire. Like, there's none of the like 25% blah blah blah, 20 like add blah. It's all +1 or -1. There's not as many in terms of there's not like as many counters. You're not putting 100 poison on someone. You've got like
How
I
easy
think
is
what
it
is
to
it
go
like
infinite in the board
12
game
hit
version?
points or something. So like it's just a simpler concept, and I feel like that is it's interesting that they did that on the board game, but they didn't do it on the multiplayer. I mean, the multiplayer is just Slay the Spire 2, but the enemies have more hit points. So I'll be very, very curious to see how they end up balancing it, if they make any changes, if they add more multiplayer only cards. I think that's probably the best way to actually do some like
Oh.
balancing stuff. But yeah, I mean, Will and I played again not too long ago, and it's shocking like how different some of the cards are in terms of their value. Like plus or minus strength. Minus strength of the enemy is like twice as good because it's basically doing it for
For both
both
of
of
us, yeah.
you.
Now, I completely forgot about the co-op, and yeah, y'all play a lot of it. I had intended to play it, but I guess I don't know. I plum forgot that it even existed. I forgot to do it, and I forgot that it existed. So, real quick, how does it work?
Well, you fire up a run and people join, and you can select whoever you want. So in our first co-op run, we did Oops All Silence, and we had three silence going at the same time. One of I think it was me that was doing like a
So
make.
many shivs,
I
y'all.
know. I know. We were just like, let's do poison. We're just gonna do a
Poison
poison build.
stacks. Yeah, it's it
There's
makes a
poison
lot of sense.
stacks. There you go.
And like at all the rest sites, when you're playing normal single player, you'll notice that like your character kind of like sits in like one of four seats on these logs around the campsite. But
Oh.
in multiplayer, like those seats are filled out with all the other characters, and like
Fun.
there's fun little details with that. There are unique multiplayer only cards for things like you play this card, and like you can use potions on yourself or your allies. There was one where Will and I were playing, and I think I was the regent, and I had this colorless card that was like, or this thing that was like, add a colorless card to your partner's deck, and I'm just like, I was just spamming Will's deck with it every time. I'm like, here, have a free card.
He was just
What's
throwing
wrong with a
bricks in
free
there,
card?
bricks left and right. But sorry, but like, but critically, is it that everyone takes their turn at the same time,
Yeah,
or
so this
what?
is an interesting thing where like anyone at any point can play a card, and the order of operations for
Oh.
it becomes very interesting, where like
God damn it, Will. Why did you play all of your turns so fast? Like, I had things that could made it better. I was gonna put vulnerable on him.
You like at any point someone could put debuffs on the enemy that other players could capitalize on, but it's all just like it's very like I think this is very fun, where it's simultaneously like very strategic and chaotic, and everyone is just like, let's let,
Yeah.
all the things are happening, and like the defect like lightning bolts are flying off, and like the giant the regent sword is going and like poking at stuff, and like it's a good time. Like I think if you played Slay the Spire 1, you're like, yeah, I don't know, like it's okay, but I'm not really sure if this game is my jam. I will almost guarantee you that playing with like at least one other person, but like at three or four people, like
Four, it's too many.
it's
Don't do
quite
four.
zany. Like especially if you're in the same room or on Discord or something, and being able to like voice chat, like, no, why'd you do that? I was gonna kill that guy. Like it gets very silly. But yeah, I think
Indeed.
Colin, to your
Sounds
point,
promising.
maybe a little long.
The main issue that I have with all the multiplayer is that if you want to do optimal play, the only way to do that is for everyone to communicate exactly all their cards, all their potions available, and for everyone to like basically get like not just their own like setup and memorize that and like think about that, but think about the context of everyone's and because the order that you play things has such a significant result on the how combat can go. And also you can like play one thing and then like have like double someone's potion on or double someone's power, which allows them to do something that out like the number of
Well, it
permutations.
sounds right up your alley, Will.
Well,
No, that's
it gets too much though. That's the thing. Is like you could sit there for
sure. I
30
hear you.
minutes to make a single decision about like for a turn. But you'd have to have everyone in the same room almost. I think that's the only way to do it. And
It's
so
like how
basically,
chess wouldn't be more fun if it were the board was twice as wide.
yeah. And imagine you're playing chess and it's like you got Magnus Carlsen over there, and he's like advising what to do, and like you don't know exactly, but you're just kind of, it's not fun for the player who doesn't really
Right.
know as much about what's going
Well,
on.
And
The
it's
thing
not
is
fun
to
for the
be, you have
player
to
who
have a whole.
does know because you're like, I can't just tell them what to do. So that you watch them play extremely unoptimized move and be like, fucking idiot.
One thing I'm very curious about when we hit 1.0 will be Like, what is like the co-op scene for this game look like? Because I could easily see something of like you have like four player A10 or A20 equivalents at the time, like four player co-op races going on where they like I've seen other games do this where like they set a specific seed and they have like two streams going at the same time and whoever
Yeah,
finishes
totally.
first wins. But like I could also see something like, ooh, Ascension 20 in co-op, like there's a time limit now. And like you don't have all the time in the world. It's still turn-based, but you gotta like you can't sit there and quarterback all day long to like, oh, we gotta
No,
find the
that's
optimal
exactly what it would
point.
be. One person would just be looking at everyone's screen and making all the decisions. That's the fastest way to do it.
But there wouldn't be enough time for that, though, is what I'm saying. Like you would have this sort of like fear factor involved of like we can't look at everything. Like each person has to be aware. It's like, you know, it's like a football game, right? You can't like be aware of what's happening like all over the rest of the field, only kind of like what's left and right of you. But like if everyone's doing that, then you work as like a solid unit kind of thing. So
That
basically
sounds
what I'm saying
terrible.
is that,
I
you
hate
know,
that game.
Slay the Spire 2 is the NFL is what I'm trying to say.
Well,
So
yeah.
really, someday we'll all have to play Gloomhaven, because the way Gloomhaven gets around it is that you pick a card beforehand and then you all reveal it at the same time and then you figure out how to play. So there is a little bit of like, I mean, that would not work for Slay the Spire. Like, it's just a fundamentally different game. But I wonder if there's not something. I don't think that the multiplayer as it is right now is like something that brings you back over and over and over again. At least not for me.
I'm done with it.
Like it seems like a like I would rather just both of us be playing Slay the Spire next to each other and be like, oh, nice move.
Yeah, we're I think we've decided that Rocket League is going to be our two-player game because Slay the Spire is just two players, not as much fun.
It has
Well,
not displaced Rocket League.
like that's the problem though, is that you've mastered Slay the Spire 1, so there are no more worlds to conquer at this point. You've already beaten it. Whereas
Haven't,
like
no.
some
There's not,
schlub
I've only
like
A10
me,
three of them, so.
well, I mean, no, you know, nobody's perfect, but like some schlub like me will like would benefit severely from playing like co-op with someone like Will, where the, you know, you're just able to like, no. You don't want to play that card. You want to play this card in
You
this
start the
sequence.
map from the top, Scott. I can't believe you've been starting from that was, yeah.
Yeah,
I know.
middle out.
I have less than 700 hours. What,
I mean,
I
it's well
should.
over 1,000. I think it's if I include Slay the Spire 1, oh my God, what's that up
You're
to?
probably what, over like 1700 hours? Anyway, another really big important thing about co-op is like the fingers pointing all at the same time. Like,
That
you
is
know,
very good. I
when
do
you
like
go
the fingers a lot.
into the merchant shop, like, you know, the merchant is pointing at like all the stuff that you're
Wow.
hovering.
I mean, that's
Genuinely
incredible.
very good.
Yeah, I spent a decent amount of time on our Slay the Spire episode talking about my love for the merchant. This is a great merchant, and the merchant is the cornerstone of any good rogue dungeon delve adventure.
They're back, baby.
Games can live
Oh.
and die on the quality of their merchant, and golly, they somehow managed to make this kooky dude better. So there's a hand pointing at
Wow.
every
Did you just
item for
assume?
every
Well, so
character.
in co-op, you know, like you open up the chest and there's like three or four rewards for, you know, however many people are playing, but like you basically like pick which one you want, but like in order to do that, like you mouse cursor towards it and like the defect's arm will like go and like point at it because you are the
Oh,
defect,
I
or
see.
like the
I
regent's
see.
arm will come in from the side and like wiggle around on, you know, so it becomes a mouse cursor effectively, but it's a very effective way of demonstrating that like, hey, I want this thing, but like, you know, maybe you want that thing, and you know, you're just kind of like pointing and hovering over things like that. It's a very good way of displaying that information.
I see. I see. I thought you were saying that when you in co-op, when you go to the merchant, for each player's cursor on their computer, there's a separate merchant hand coming in, and there's four different
That
merchant hands pointing
would be
around
pretty
different
great. That would
items.
be very funny.
Hey, Mega Crit. I'm sorry what I said earlier, that you should be called Mega, not so great. Consider adding a ton of unnecessary extra merchant hands.
I think the
That's cool. That's cool.
last point that I'll talk about the co-op part is drawing on the map also. I think like that I guess that's also a new feature you can do in single player, but like it's a good way to kind of like you know, visualize to the rest of your teammates of like, yeah, we should do this route. Oh, like
Smart.
these elites are over here, kind of a thing. Like, oh, here's where the shop is, sort of stuff. It's a good it's a again, like these are all things that like I'm glad that even in like this very early access period, like we're getting like an intro window into what they're thinking of like what like their long-term game plan process is. And like, all the little things about like card details and bouncing, that's fine. Like that'll be figured out over time. But like these like major sort of ideas that they're playing with, I think are very smart and have like a very good like long runway to them. So yeah,
Even
I think
in
it was.
single player, the map drawing is like super useful, and I in Slay the Spire 1, it would be a massive like a benefit, I think.
Let's see. So yeah, like we kind of talked a little bit about yeah, the new like the so yeah, co-op the biggest one, but also maybe like on par with the biggest one, the new characters. So we have two new characters. We have the Regent, who looks very similar to the collector boss, I think, from Slay the Spire 1, kind of like sitting on a big throne and with a couple minions at their side, but very different origin story. And then you have the Necrobinder, who I feel like I'm getting the sense that like Necrobinder could have been the Watcher from the first game, who opened up a book that she shouldn't have and then got turned into a skeleton. But yeah,
Plays very differently.
yes, plays very differently. So the Regent is a new character that has like this like dual currency setup to it, which is very interesting. So you have like your standard energy that you play cards with, but some cards have like a little star icon on it as well. In order to play those, you have to have a bunch of stars banked up, which is just kind of sits next to your where you have your energy. And there are certain cards that you just need a certain amount of stars to play. But there's also this, what's it called, the Celestial Blade, that you forge things with. And when you play a card that says forge, it summons this like very well animated, like cool, like orbiting blade around your character that's just
Did
like
you know if you get multiple of them, you can have multiple orbiting you?
You have a hell of a lot of them, in fact.
Yeah, I had like I think four. That was pretty fun. I mean, I couldn't play them. My deck was so messed up that it didn't work, but it's cool looking.
And the
But
Regent is named as such because they are the heir to the astral throne or something. They are from space, folks. We have an alien has come to the land of Spire. And it's very fun
are they
and
actually
like,
from space? Or are they from like the astral sea?
oh
I
no, like
think.
the introduction, it specifically shows the Regent in their spaceship going
Oh.
like, computer, find me a more interesting planet to visit. And they look very alien, very non, they're vaguely humanoid, but it's a little bit difficult to describe, but like there's no discernible like facial features.
Like a
And yet
starfish.
through the anime, they're very starfish, like through the animations, they are able to portray this very like haughty, above everything, noble character who again is literally traveling around in a throne that is being carried by little minion guys.
If it had a nose, it would be looking down at you from it.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. But I just recently unlocked them and I was taken in by this new character more than any other Slay the Spire character unlocked that I've seen before.
Yeah, I thought it was in.
Wait, this is unrelated to that, but every single character now has like their own special strike animation, which I very much, or like attack animation. I very much like that. Regent has like stars that come down out. They're my favorite of the new attack animations.
Great sound with that too. It's like
Yeah.
a very satisfying sort of they did a really good job with the sounds.
Yeah, sound effects, animations, top tier.
But I don't know anything about this Necrobinder. What's going on here? What's their
Skull.
deal?
Skull Lady.
Yeah.
She's got a
Well,
good skull hand.
Skull Lady is joined by so normally when you encounter an enemy in Slay the Spire, sometimes they'll have minions with them, but this time you have the minion.
Aha.
The Necrobinder, she is joined by her trusty left hand of darkness, Osti, which I think is supposed to be short for like osteoporosis or something bone related.
Just lab
But
for bones.
yeah, just like a bony big disembodied hand.
Whose hand is that?
It's probably in the lore. We're gonna have to wait
The
until
thing.
1.0. Yeah, the thing grew three sizes that day and shed all of its flesh. But yeah, so the Necrominder has a hand buddy that also has its own unique attack animation of like pounding down with like a fist punching thing, which is very fun. But can also be used as a tank to like tank attacks for you. So Osti will take damage for you first before you take damage. But you know, if you throw shields up and stuff, like I think the Necrobinder's passive that she starts with, like Osti will gain 1 HP every turn, which in some cases is good, in some cases may play against whatever sort of playstyle you're looking for. But she also has these new status effect cards called Doom, which works kind of like poison. But instead, like this Doom, like you'll add Doom to an enemy, and if the Doom meter gets higher than their current HP, then at the end of that turn, at the end of the enemy's turn, this is very important, then they'll die. Like this big, like ominous purple portal will open up beneath them. They'll turn to like stone or be frozen or something, and then descend down into the Doom portal,
Cool.
which is pretty great. But if you are like me, used to just like spamming poison builds on the silent character all the time, you're like, oh, that's right, it triggers at the end of the
Yeah,
turn. I am an idiot.
that messed me up pretty good a couple times.
But it effectively works as kind of like a poison, like a remix of like the poison mechanic in a way. But I think it's still very, very interesting. Will, did you have like a hot take on like how these new characters have kind of fit into the established paradigm of the others?
Well, I think they each have very interesting archetypes, but unfortunately, like, it's the case that some are just way better than others. And these are things that are going to be sorted out in, I'm sure, in early access. But yeah, for the Regent, star builds right now are pretty much the only viable way to beat A10. And like, that's not necessarily the way you should envision the game. If you're starting it out, like, you can do a forged sword, and like that's going to be totally fine as a way of killing everything. But like once you get up to the highest level, everything gets just so tight that you can't do every sort of build. And so I think for the Necrobinder, I think I've had maybe one Doom build so far. I mean, granted, I think I have the least number of hours into that character, but some of them are just really hard to do, and it's unfortunate because you want every single archetype to be equally likely and equally good at the highest level. And so there's just a lot of little tweaking they need to do behind the scenes to make sure that's the case. And that's what they did with like Ironclad, making sure you can't infinite every single time with like one specific build. And so yeah, this is just early access. I expect that this is all going to get worked out in the long run though.
Who do you like better between Regent and Necrobinder?
Regent for sure.
Interesting.
And my favorite is Defect.
Well, I mean, that's everyone's favorite, right? That's why
I
everyone was
don't
so
like how
up.
thick he is now.
I mean, yeah, I agree. I don't. That was an odd choice, but that does nothing for me.
Did anything change significantly with Defect about their specific archetypes? Because like from what, and I think I've spent the least amount of time with the Defect because I wanted to spend more time with the new characters. But like the sense that I got was like, yeah, okay, this plays basically the same as the first one.
They added glass.
That's right.
Oh, glass. Yeah, glass is. I don't. There's never
Fine.
been a glass archetype as far as like that. That's just like a thing that might get thrown into like a big orb build where you have lots of orbs and lots of focus. But there's not like a oh, I'm gonna go all glass. Like that's just never a thing. So maybe it could use a little bit more work.
How do we feel about like the act designs and themes so far? So,
All right, from memory, we got the
Fish.
swamp. Shit. Yeah, right. It's like docks or something.
Well, you
Then we
got the
have,
bugs.
oh shit. Yeah, right. The like giant termite, the Loot Golane, Deserts of Loot Golane, maggot hive or something. And then a castle or something,
Yeah,
maybe?
you go from Act One, which you either go randomly get assigned either Overgrowth or Underdocks,
Oh, of course.
and your Overgrowth bosses will either be the Ceremonial Beast, who's kind of this mystical elk. It'll be the
More
Kin,
like a
who are
mystical pain in my ass.
Yep,
This fucking boss, let me tell you. No, actually, probably the one that gave me the least trouble. All right, then you go to what?
the you got the Kin, who are three bush minions with their kind of shaman leader. You got Vantum, who is the one that we were referring earlier with the big sword tail that just kind of like looms over you at like, you know, turn three or four or whatever. And then the Underdocks, where you have the waterfall giant, or as
fuck
I call
that
them,
guy, by the way. Fuck
the invincible suicide bomber.
Is it a guy? I don't know what it is. Fuck that waterfall. I can't stand that one.
You got Soul Fish with a Y. That sounds like an 90s prog rock band. You got the Lagavulin Matriarch, who I can only assume that's where the Act 1 elite from the first game came from. Act 2, so far we only have the Hive, which whose bosses include the Insatiable, who will devour everything in its path and give you like cards to run away. You got the Knowledge Demon, who gives you a choice between a shit deal or a shittier deal.
You like that one, right? I remember you saying you love that boss, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I love the Knowledge Demon. And then you got Kaiser Crab, the latest special from Red Lobster, who is kind of basically just the shield and spear pre-boss from who guards the heart in Act 4 of Slay the Spire 1, very similar design. And then Act 3 is Glory, where your bosses are the Queen, the Test Subject, who has three phases, or the Door Maker, who desperately needs an art rework if you've been exposed to the early 2000s internet as a teenager.
So the Act 3 boss is not locked. I kind of assumed. Interesting. Okay. So the casual experience of this game right now is that you pick one of these random bozos at the end of Act 3 who don't feel like a final boss in my opinion as your grand climactic fight. I remember there being some like weird like H.R. Geiger dog or something at the end of normal runs of Slay the Spire 1.
There was the door that you
and I recall the final fight of Slay the Spire 1 being like better in every conceivable way, like more exciting, more dramatic. It felt like a final battle. It felt like a proper climactic fight that when I went to the next screen and was killed instantly by the heart.
Yeah,
it felt a lot better.
We don't have a climactic battle between a dancing donut and its dodecahedron love partner. I mean,
indeed. Yeah. Okay, no, everyone's just staring blankly at me. Did I make this up? Am I misremembering? Anyway, whatever. So I just want to get out there real quick that my experience, one of my biggest complaints about this game is that the ending feels bad, and then you go and you talk to the architect for a second, your guy has an aneurysm, falls over, victory ? It's like, oh man, for how hard I worked for that run win, it was pretty lousy. Not as bad as like a readme document victory screen, but pretty close.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that kind of comes with the territory of where it's at right now, because they don't have that system of like In Slay the Spire 1, Act 4, fighting the heart, like the beating heart of the spire, you had to make some sacrifices along the way. You had to go and fight like a really hard elite to get the red key. You had to give up an option to rest to get, I think, the green key. And then the blue key, I don't know.
The blue key, you had to not take a treasure.
Yep. Sure. And, you know, with our powers combined, you know, you fight that Act 3 boss and then you go fight the heart. But yeah, like I can understand there not being like the climactic super titan battle at the end right now, but it definitely does feel like some of the bosses are more interesting than some of the other ones. Like
yes, of course. Sorry, I derailed a bit. Yeah, what do we think of these biomes and these bosses? Real quick call out, different, every biome has a different chest design. Chef's kiss. What a wonderful little detail. This game is full of a lot of wonderful little details like that, which I do appreciate.
Don't care at all. I this is one thing where like, yeah, you're gonna call it something different, there are gonna be different enemies in it, like you could just totally randomize every single time and that's fine with me. Only benefit in like you calling out, oh, it's this specific area, is you kind of understand, oh, then I need to prepare for specific enemies. And unless you're in the habit of doing that, like looking at the boss, making sure that during the course of the act that you're actually preparing for that boss fight, and thinking about the elites that you might encounter along the way and the normal enemies, I don't know. I'm
meh.
I think it's fun flavor. It's not gotten to the level where it impacts my playing because I don't know what the bosses do anyway.
Yeah,
not
I have
super
not.
Well.
This is on my to-do list is to actually go through for every single enemy and for every single character, write out specifically what are the archetype advantages and disadvantages for every single one. That way, you know, like, what's the probability of me meeting was the net sum of all of the enemies that I'll face in this act that require me to, that challenge like card draw, that challenge things that I need to like prepare for, and that will guide my decisions as I'm making card selections and purchasing things. And so I haven't done that, which is why I'm not
sounds like a hoot
100%.
Though.
Yeah, no, that's my, oh my God, that's my jam in
that's
general.
A special
But,
interest.
Yeah, I've taken screenshots of every single event, of every single boss, every quarter, of every
perfect
single.
Game for
So
Will.
It's a thing I do. But this point, I only have a rudimentary sense of it, and I have
right.
not actually delved deep into the specifics. I don't know why.
What,
maybe I have other things to do.
Perhaps.
Feel like you
yeah, about
haven't,
these bosses.
Given how much you've played of this game in the last 3 weeks.
Well, he's been doing market research for his own game, really. So,
of
like,
course,
this
yes.
has really been. You know, just
it's a tax write-off.
Yeah.
I mean, to
he
be
talked,
real,
he talked
okay,
business.
as I build my own game, which is another Spire-like game, I have looked directly at the enemies and the archetypes they challenge. I've looked directly at the cards, the events, and I'm like gaining inspiration on the fly that I write into my Discord chat. Like, yes, we need to do this. This is a great idea. Let's think about the way we can warp this into our own thing. Yeah, so it's definitely a deep source of inspiration.
Well, biome treasure chests is my suggestion.
Well, I'm going to
yeah.
go ahead and not do that, but I appreciate the idea.
One thing that I'm interested to see if they go this direction at all would be that, like, if each act has, like, two different variants to it, maybe three with future DLC, I don't know, that if they did something like sort of like Dead Cells, where it's like, okay, I'm in Act 1 Overgrowth, I've got this really good build going that would work really good for like Act 2 Hive, but I don't know if I'm going to get Act 2 Hive next. But if I go and do this thing along the way to trigger that and have some, oh, and maybe like Dead Cells is the wrong idea, but like,
yeah,
like
but
like a, like a.
do you even know the archetypes of the bosses yet well enough for you to build a strategy based off? Like, if it told you, like, here, you've got two separate options for Act 2. If you look at it at the start of Act 1, you're like, ah, I will build my deck in a way that it spikes starting in middle of Act 2. Like, how many hours do you need in order to get to the point where that is like a useful knowledge for you to have?
Probably 5 hours of gameplay, I think. And
I
then you
see.
Would be pro enough to do no.
Well,
yeah.
Also, but another way to make that decision is like you at a certain point. I mean, there are certain bosses that I specifically hate. And so, you know, that you might make an informed decision of like, well, I definitely want to avoid that biome because I don't want to roll.
I hate fish.
The see-through fish or whatever.
He's the best.
Or the one that explodes in a big steam bomb at the end.
Yeah, fuck that guy, though. The
yeah, right,
the steam waterfall.
The waterfall, which very cool character design. Oh, boy.
No,
creature
that's not
designs.
A cool no. The waterfall is the least inspired design out of every single character. It's
I
a
don't know.
Fucking,
Will.
It's a waterfall.
I've seen a lot of elementals in my time.
You should have two bosses,
and
at
they're
the top.
Running out of designs. They're running out of elemental designs.
Yeah,
let
it be.
Cool.
It's dead. It's done. It's all been done. Just let it die.
What
should
about
be
elephant? But
it's
waterfall
Slay the Spire
fight.
2. There should be two bosses at the top, and one on either side, and it picks your path and which path you go on. That's what you go to for the next land. Like, one is a bug land and one's whatever the to be announced second act is.
Oh yeah, let's pitch some second act ideas. Obviously, well, shoot, desert is too close to like
dinosaurs.
Hive. Oh, dinosaurs. Ooh la la.
Dinosaurs,
space aliens.
Space.
Maybe something cyberpunk. I don't know. I feel like cyberpunk and this sort of genre really go together really well. I don't know why.
Yep.
It's called Netrunner is what it is. But anyway, yeah, I think like if they have like, yeah, I'm excited to see what they do for like the Act 2 and 3 like B-sides and like what agency, if any, you have over those. But yeah, like, I mean, like
And
half.
what associated ancient will be part of it? Ooh, you know,
Yeah,
I'm excited for that.
they have
Yeah,
any
so that'll be
movies.
forthcoming indeed. Big,
Yeah, I
big,
want to fight the
big
ancients.
content drops.
Fighting that whale. Yeah, I guess another thing that they added to this game was like card enchantments. So being able to like, you know, if you have a card that, let's say, like does 3 damage X times or whatever, ooh, you get that enchantment option to increase the damage to it by 2 or whatever. And now all of a sudden it's doing 5 damage per X.
Or replay, just play the
I mean,
card twice.
replay is that an enchantment? Or
Yes, it is.
can you put that on there on your one of your cards permanently?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I know the card that adds it to you to it like during a single combat, and that's like very good.
There's like draw cards for a power, draw 2 cards when you play that power. There's the nimble to add the add defense. There's sharp to add, there's all kinds of things to modify. But I think, Scott, to your point, like this is a fantastic addition, and it's really validating for me because
I don't
that's
think
something,
it's.
that's the thing, like modifying cards and not just a linear, like you have a single thing, you're gonna upgrade it down a single path towards its upgrade. No, instead you get to do a
A thing that adds
specialization.
it down that path, too. It's like, ooh, now the attack, instead of 7 damage, does 9 damage. The upgrade makes it do 5 more damage. It's like, I found them to be
No. There's
underwhelming.
different
You have the
combos. Come
boomerang.
on.
You have the boomerang. You have the thing that attacks 3, 4 times. You add 2 more damage to that, and suddenly you multiply that damage all the way through. It's
Sure.
very satisfying.
Sure. I mean, it is objectively better for cards that do something more than once. But like most of the time it's like add 3 to defense card to th that adds defense. It's like, well, I mean, yeah. It's fine. I'm comparing to Monster Train where the enchantments do legitimately like game-breaking things. Like that is the core of the game. It changes fundamentally how your cards work in a way that lets you build synergies.
I mean,
Like,
you
what's
go.
the synergy of +2 damage?
There's an
Well,
enchantment which lets you play a card automatically at the
yeah.
play a skill automatically at the start of combat.
Yeah, those are cool. I think, but most of the time it's not that. Most of the time
Yeah,
it's
most of the time it's lame. Yeah, I agree.
lame.
Well,
Well, I
here's
was excited to see
I'm
it.
disappointed because I want it to be more. I see what they're doing and I think it could be better.
Yeah.
Could be
Well, there's a
better.
game I have to. No, sorry.
Sounds like this game needs a hard reset. Here's some of
Yeah.
the like just real quick, here's some of the ideas about enchantment stuff. So like you have clone, this card can be duplicated at rest sites. Corrupted, deal 50% more damage but lose 2 HP.
That one feels really good, by the way. You put that on a really high damage card, and whenever you lay that thing out, oh my
Ooh.
goodness, it's so satisfying.
This one bailed me out a few times. Royally approved. This card has innate and retain. So you start with that card at the combat and it stays in your hand for whenever you want it. There's the slither enchantment. When you draw this card, randomize its cost from 0 to 3, which if you have like a really high energy like cost card, it's like, well, now all of a sudden, like it might cost that much all the time, or it might be free. Which was something I was like, ooh, yeah, that seems real dope. So
All those are the good ones that are like those are relics.
no.
They're relic equivalents. They're things
Yeah.
that you get from if this was Slay the Spire 1, it is a relic that you would get that lets you do this to a card, like lightning in a bottle. Like those are fun. They're good, but they feel more like relics to me than like card upgrades.
So what's wrong with it? It's just a fun and
I
interesting
just
way
don't
of
like
doing it.
sharp. That's really what it is.
Yeah, no,
Sharp is
there's one
no.
event where you can do like one of three things, and then all the three things suck,
Yeah.
and they're all enchantments. Yes, that event is a it's a very whatever sort of event.
Yeah.
Well, what I liked about it was I think one of my favorite parts of Slay the Spire 2, pardon me, the original game, is the ability to smith cards. And no, I'm not talking about my co-host. Upgrade your cards, and now there are enchantments. So there's a way to not only upgrade your card, you can also supercharge it with another type of upgrade, another separate upgrade system. And maybe it's not as exciting as it could be, but perhaps it will be over the course of early access.
Yeah, and I think that like the thing that Colin's driving home is like with Monster Train, like the ethos of the game is like your goal is to be like as wildly like comically overpowered at the end of it as possible. So you're like cutting cards in half and stapling together on other cards and all that fun stuff. And
That was the
in Slay the Sp
description.
well, it's a similar idea, but like Slay the Spire feels more. I was thinking about this earlier while I was traveling. And I'm like, you know, Slay the Spire almost kind of feels like a fighting game half the time, where I'm just like trying to figure out what like the best like combo is, and if that combo isn't like perfectly tuned to this opponent that I'm fighting at, they're gonna find an in and just eventually wear me down. Whereas like Monster Train is like number go high, big explosion happen, and lots of moaning when hit
It's
enemy.
the damage per turn from turn one of the first combat to the end in Slay the Spire is like, I don't know, 10 versus 100 versus for Monster Train, it's like 10 versus 1,000.
Just different design ethoses for them. Different strokes for different folks. The last thing that I'm very interested to see what they do for this early access period is card quests. So this is something that's
Oh,
like it's
yeah.
not there's not a whole lot of these, but there's certainly more interesting kind of events that happen throughout Slay the Spire 2, where one of them is like you'll be given a quest, and it's like a card that's effectively like a curse that like doesn't do anything in combat, but if you hold on to that card and don't get rid of it, then if you eventually come to this spot, ooh, you can either take that card and hatch it at a rest site. Now you got a cool dino bird buddy hanging out with you that will help out with stuff. Or if you hang onto that card in the next act, you'll f like X marks the spot. You'll get like a bazillion gold dumped on you and all that. But it carries this kind of risk reward of like, well, do I want an extra card in my deck to do this thing? Oh, I don't know. It's interesting. Like, I don't know if it's like right now, if it's in a perfect state, but I would be sad if they scrapped it completely, because it definitely seems like a way to kind of spice up that model a little bit.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I
no,
like
it's
that.
nifty. Is the sword good? I never was able to kill enough elites to forge the
Will
sword.
told me in our co-op session, no. Flat, very flatly.
Well, that wasn't that. That's not related to this specific dynamic, though. Like
Oh,
the
isn't no?
sword is
There's
forging the sword.
the kill five elites to hatch the sword kind of thing.
I thought it was a card, and therefore what we're talking about.
Is
Yeah,
it?
confused.
But perhaps not, perhaps not. Yeah,
No,
it's cool. It's nifty. They're doing a lot of nifty, neat stuff with like existing mechanics and tweaking them a bit, and like any good sequel should. I took the treasure chest X marks the spot one r in a recent run. I kept avoiding it because I was like, eh, that's gonna. I don't want to be beholden to this card. I want to be able to travel around the map as I please. But then, when you actually take the card, it's an unavoidable spot. It's not that it just creates a spot somewhere on the map. It's like it all,
Yeah,
it's a
converges into that.
central HUD that all points lead to. Which I think is an interesting idea. Like the map design is contingent on whether or not you have that thing which everything kind of like converges into. And so, it's that felt a little weird to me, but I'll allow it. It's fine.
This is unrelated, but that reminds me. I remember now. Also, the thing that I don't like about Slay the Spire 1, which is how hard it is to draw cards and put more cards in your deck, and how you just want to keep getting more cards, but it's bad for you. And
What?
yeah, having thick decks is bad a lot of
No,
times.
most of my wins are 30, 40 plus cards.
Oh,
Wow.
maybe I'm playing wrong then.
Yeah.
I mean, that felt like that was true in Slay the Spire 1, but
No, even in Slay the
I'm
Spire 1,
always
thick deck is like
disappointed.
the there's a
I'm always disappointed when I skip a card reward and you get nothing for it. I want them to give me 5 gold for
The
skipping a
monster
card.
train, like you don't want
Yes.
anything, so therefore you get the
I
oh,
want
basically
a pittance.
consolation
I would
prize.
be fine even if it was like 3 gold. I want something that rewards me for my choice. That's not just like, sorry.
Well, let me introduce to you the ancient upgrade that allows you to sacrifice your card rewards. And for every 2 cards you sacrifice, you get another relic. Oh, wow. What a time
Was
it
that the
was.
wax dragon who
I
gives
was
that? Who
just
gives that?
I
I
was
was yeah, I
stacking
think that
those.
is Pale's Wing that does that for you
Waxy
or something.
boy.
It was delightful. I get what you're saying. It feels bad to not pick a card.
For sure.
But if you're...
Especially the boss reward. Like, when you, like, just... Like, all three of the rarest cards, you're like, none of these fit the build. And you have to, like, say, no, it sucks.
Yeah, and especially because a lot of times those ones are, like, you can't work them in. It's a straight-up curse. It's like, well, I will never play this card because it costs two and it does nothing for me. So having this card...
Can we get a reroll on this? Or maybe or want to run merchant reroll also, I'd appreciate, so I can get that Hellraiser build off the ground.
Yeah, it would be nice that, like, and I know that, like, everything Slay the Spire 1 is tuned to perfection, so it's immune from criticism, but if I could just sell off a fucking card or potion to get that one extra gold to get the card I need.
Yeah, selling. Who doesn't have selling?
Apparently, Slay the Spire. It's the opposite of selling. It costs money to get rid of a card.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You absolutely can't sell a card. That's the opposite of the game design.
Yeah, it would be nice to be able to, like, sell potions, maybe. And then that would be, I feel like that would be easier to tune. But yeah, that is very aggravating.
You should be able to take on debt.
Well, you can actually. There is a mechanic. There's an event where, like, you uncover things and you can get the debt curse if you take on six uncover. It doesn't matter.
You pluck a card, take one of the debt cards from the merchant, and, like, they give you another 50 gold so you can get that card. Now you've got debt in your, and the next time you see them, you can pay off your debt for 75 gold or something.
Ooh, can it be like Zelda, you know, where the theme is like, if you steal from the shopkeeper, the next time you see them, they kill you. I don't know. That's probably.
Yeah. I believe there's a shopkeeper boss fight at one point. I don't know if anyone else encountered those before? Is this spoiler territory? Will, have you not fought the shopkeeper yet?
I have, but in Downfall, not in.
Okay, so this skip
spoilers,
ahead.
Spoilers.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
I'm imagining his attack noises. Ooh.
I believe so. There's a fake merchant in this game.
Yes.
Oh, which is excellent. Right. I know what you're talking about. I have not.
And I believe there's some kind of potion or some item that you can, like, click and then use on the fake merchant, and that will trigger a combat sequence with you and this fake merchant.
Oh, wow.
Where, yeah, I don't know if he has like 9,000 hit points or something, but yeah, like it would be funny, like, if you could do something like that for the normal merchant, where you could just, like, beat him up and take his stuff, but then the next time you encounter him, he has, like, I don't know, a bunch of bodyguards with him that are gonna, like, beat you up. And
is it cube chaos?
Well, you know, Gungeon does this, so score one for enter
Scott,
the Gungeon.
Was it cube chaos where you could just spend infinitely into debt, but then it would slowly start sending, like, more and more weird, like, crap after you?
Yes,
like you for your debt.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Cube Chaos did have that that thing where, like, yeah, you could keep buying, like, all sorts of wild stuff to add to your like deck, as it were, in that game, but you would have like the enemy side of the screen would have, like, monsters. I think they were just called, like, debt monsters.
Yeah,
that would, like,
this
summon...
is like debt collectors would come for you. And you had to fight them off. I liked that a lot. I don't know
right,
if that
we should
fit
we should do
Spire,
like five
but...
We need to do five more episodes in Cube Chaos. You're right.
Cube Chaos 2, when?
When Cube Chaos 1 finally
Chaos.
Comes out.
As soon as the solo dev moves to Bangkok.
Yeah. Selling relics. I feel like that is something, like, not cards, but relics.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. Yeah, that would fix it.
Yeah.
And potions.
Perfect. We have
That would make sense. Because a lot of times, too, you get relics where you're like, well, this relic just doesn't really help me.
I guess you have a problem where, like, the relics that upgrade, like, two skills or two attacks, like,
you
just get
sell
used
those
up. And so if you sell them, well, actually, you know what? That's
you
fine,
just
though.
Wouldn't, like, be able to sell those.
No, I think you should be able to. Like, I think it should be one of those things, like, oh, the added benefit of this is that you can sell it later.
Ooh.
And I don't know.
Maybe they're worth less to sell.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they should be worth less, but.
Yeah.
Well, again, it sounds like we've solved it. We fixed this game. Hey, speaking of things that needed fixing, Slay the Spire 1 looked pretty wonky in certain aspects.
Hold
certain
your
points.
Fucking tongue. What are you saying?
It looked bad, and you should feel bad for not thinking that.
I don't know. Entire game doesn't look bad in Slay the Spire 1.
The way
1,
that
but,
the,
like,
Ironclad attacked.
The Ironclad looks rough. He looks like he shouldn't be able to stand. His tiny little ankles shouldn't be able to hold up all that iron. And like, yeah, the animations were a little bit weird. They've more or less resolved pretty much all those issues. This is a good looking game. I noticed that in Slave Spire 1, I did actually boot it up like once to take a look. And I was showing my partner, I was alt tabbing between them, and she was having a little bit of difficulty determining which was which. But not too much difficulty. The backgrounds are a little grittier looking. There's more dark line work and whatnot. So like stylistically, there is some stuff in Slay the Spire 1 that I prefer. But yeah, the artwork and the animations are technically much improved and looking real tight. Like for example, there's the at the down at the docks. There's a boss, there's an enemy, I should say, that's there are these little eels, and the fin that runs along their back is animated so brilliantly. It's subtle, but as the eel is slithering sort of back and forth, you're seeing this fin that runs along their entire body move in this way that you would expect to see in real life. From like your perspective, your fixed perspective of the camera, and it's great. I'd be very curious to know more about their animation workflow, because this game, the enemies, it's full of subtle, cool stuff like that.
Yeah, and there's like in Act Two, there's like this big ugly toad that I think is like a subtle like
toad
evolution.
Pole.
Yeah, where he'll be kind of like normal looking, and then he'll charge up, and then he'll like gain these like spikes on him, and then like, oh, now he's got like the thorns buff on him. But it's like a great like it's a great visual indicator, but it's also like very well animated with that whole sequence. And then he pops off the thorns and they go flying all around, and it's just it's very well done. Like the also with act two, like the boss who's just like the sandworm sucking everything in, and he's got like these little like flailing arms everywhere. That's just like it feels very stressful, and like, oh man, I'm really like running away from like a Sarlacc pit here kind of vibe to it. For how much I was complaining about Slay the Spire 1 when I first played it, like, oh, you know, the animations look, I don't know, kind of like, you know, they're just kind of like there, but not really. Like, they really went all out with, like, the art design for this so far. And, like, I'm very excited to see all the new stuff that they add to it. But one other bullet point that I have here in my doc here, like, I don't remember, Will, like, did you play much of Slay the Spire 1 when it was in early access and, like, followed its development? Or did you play it when it was fully formed and had erupted out of Megacrit's head and...
Fully formed and perfect.
Yeah.
No, I was late to the game, and so I did not really get the experience of the early access.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that, like, we have... Yeah, this is, like, a very, like, unique thing where, like, this is such a... like huge release to like an already like well entrenched game that like how do you improve on perfection? Like, how do you take something that was like, you know, such a titan, I was almost to say of its time, but I don't know, like 10 years, but like, how, like, what do you follow that up with? And like, I guess, you know, it's not so much of like totally reinvent the wheel and piss off like all of your millions of fans and stuff, but like, I think what they've been doing so far has worked really well, and
you just
I think
gotta continue to forge your blade into a better blade.
forge
into your sovereign blade, you slay that spire.
One thing that I was kind of digging through the timeline stuff and reading through the, like, oh, like in the timeline, Defect has like some little buddy robot that they're hanging out with, and I thought there was like some other reference to like a different character working with like with some like analog to them, and it got me thinking that, like, you know, I could totally see that, like, 1.0 or like a future DLC, each character having like a remix or a slightly different spin on it, like, oh, you got your
like
Ironclad, and then, yeah, or, well, not even just like a skin, but just like a very tweaked very like minor, subtle, like tweaked aspect to it. Like, God, it's killing me that I don't remember like the defect buddy's name, but
They could
like
just have like a different starting relic.
different starting relic, or like, a slightly different card that they start with, and maybe like something that's very easy to tweak in the code, like, oh my God, now this play is totally different with the defect deck, or
Start with frost instead of lightning.
whoa.
Or dark.
Unplayable.
Probably, honestly, that sounds like it would throw up everything.
0 to 10. You're right. This game is garbage. What were we thinking? I'm gonna hit the delete button on the recording right here now. But yeah, I guess like, between now and when we possibly talk about Slay the Spire 2 in the far future. Well, I guess we'll talk about it again at the end of the season for sure.
I'll talk about it every single podcast. What are you talking about? Of course, I'm going to bring up Slay. We have a running joke. That's what I do. That's just what I do.
I was about to do a data collection thing by going through all of our podcast transcripts, grogpod.zone, by the way, that like charts our cumulative Spire mentions and seeing like where we kind of like peak with those. But like what else is missing? Like what else do we want from, I guess, like there's the obvious gaps. Like
Purple
there's like more.
robes.
Yeah, we need a hooded purple robe figure. We didn't have that, but like we're missing out on the Watcher. Or like we just get the Noita Mage in here, or Dysomancer. But yeah, like we want the other side, the other parts of the axe, more custom game settings, question mark. I don't
No,
know.
what we want is unlocks that are gated by achievements, essentially, and like that where the achieve like that I mentioned that earlier, but I think that that's one of my main things is I really don't like the you just play and over time you unlock everything. No, I really want some things to be skill based or like not even skill based, but like you have to be really trying to do a specific thing. Play 20 cards in a turn, like I said before. Like that's like a I think an interesting twist, and I want people to know that like there are many targets they should be thinking about, like when they enter a run, like, oh yeah, I'm gonna try and do whatever, but also if I can get something that like leans towards playing 20 cards, I'm gonna try and lean into that because I know that there's some mysterious unlock that's behind that gate. That seems like a, just a motivation factor that we just don't have right now. It's just like, oh, I beat the game again. I died again. I got some more experience. And look, there's more relics that I'm not gonna read through these. I don't know what the fuck they are. I'll look at them when I see them in the combat, but it's just kind of pointless right now. Or not pointless, but it's just it's not as motivating.
Was there anything else that we want to cover before we close the deck cover on
Play the
our
judgment card. Is that still a card? The one
No.
that does, or the I'm thinking a bludgeon, maybe something that does like a stupid amount of damage but costs 3 energy. I have a lot of bullet points about what we think ideal sequels are, but I feel like this game needs to come out into 1.0 before really comparing Slay the Spire 2 to like Mega Man 2 or Resident Evil 2 or
Do we care about the story that the timeline and the story that is they're trying to develop? Because like in Slay the Spire 1, it's like it's very abstract. Like Niao is like, yeah, okay, he's bringing you back. You're ironclad. You're like you're angry. You want to kill stuff. Okay, that's all the context you have. You just want to kill the heart. In this one, it's like, oh, well, now suddenly, like, oh, you killed my father. Prepare to die. Sort of like they're trying to build in more story, and it's not that. It's like you killed my friend as the.
I feel like it's good, because either you care about it and you like to read it, or you don't care about it and you
But
can
you don't
ignore
care
it
about it though, because you
completely.
don't understand their personalities. You don't understand anything about who they are.
Well, that's why
So,
you got to read the story.
but the story does not give you who they are though. Like
Yeah.
they give you a snapshot of like a here's an overview of the general like persona, but not like the who is this person and how they
When's the
can.
Slay the Spire TV show coming out?
Yeah, give me that, and then we can go from there.
Spire anime.
Shouldn't the combats start with your
Anime.
character saying something? Like a little dialogue bubble,
Well, not
just give them a
silent.
little more personality
Yeah,
and then some context
I
to the
would like
story.
that. I would like that a lot. Like, give me a little bit of like interaction between the character and the enemy, and maybe this like fades over time, but just
What
like
if they
give
have
me
a voice line that they
personality.
just say over and over
No, no,
again?
no. Oh my
No,
Christ, no.
okay. So I've got it, by the way.
Oh.
I have it solved.
Wow, that hit
The
hard.
Well, that was awkward. No, what it needs, like all good sequels, is like Metal Gear Solid 2. It needs at least 5 hours of
Right
radio
in.
play codec conversations between each character. It needs you to start as the Ironclad for the first 3 hours of the game, and then you get rug pulled into playing as the Regent for the second half of the game. And
That
it
was
happened.
a really crazy transition. Right, with a metal, it's a, yeah, snake to right in, yeah.
And then the last like
Andrew, fix
45
my
minutes of the
main.
game needs to be like this extremely prophetic commentary about how AI is taking over the world and
Yeah,
we
and a
all need to
boss fight
stop
on
it.
top of the Capitol building or wherever the hell, I forget. I haven't played Metal Gear Solid
Federal
2 in a long
Hall.
time.
I mean, Halo 2 is basically the exact same thing
For
anyway.
sure, for sure.
Yeah, I guess
That sums it up.
is it time? Do we check our
Judge,
energy
judge, judge,
rankings here?
judge, judge.
All right, yeah, I guess it's time to slap our numbers on the things. We'll have Andrew, you kick us off first.
Hello. I recently put a new processor in my computer. I've been replaying Stalker 2, and which in some ways there's some similarities here that I was thinking about. With Stalker 2, it feels like, oh, well, what did they improve in this sequel? Well, the graphics, obviously, like the biggest thing. So I was mulling that over, like, is that enough for a sequel? And it definitely helps. It definitely improved my experience of Slay the Spire 2. And in the case of Stalker 2, it occurred to me when I was originally playing it that, well, the narrative, the writing, the characters are like quite an improvement or a big step up. And also a big part of that game's content is like the locations, and there's so many new interesting locations in Stalker 2. I suppose the same could be said with Slay the Spire, too. The biomes have a lot of character, and I was again, excited by the fact that the treasure chests are different depending on the biome. And again, when I was discovering these new ancients, I was very excited. I was pretty jazzed about that. At one point, Tanks the Chimera says, he's a very enthusiastic character. Tanks the Chimera, which looks like incredible, great tattoo idea. Great thing. It's something I want to put into well, on my back, obviously, but also into like a D&D game or something. This is a wonderful demigod, a wonderful creature to serve or to show up in your game. He's like the first time he shows up, he says, "So weak, but you have potential. Use this weapon." And then he gives you the different items are flavored as different armaments. But what did he say the last time I encountered him? Weapons for the warrior. Grab a weapon. Let's fight. It's like, oh, perfect, beautiful, I love it. And anyway, all that to say, we've established time and time again that deck builders are not my preferred type of game. But
Boo.
this was pretty quiet. Pipe down. You'll have your chance, sir. I had plenty of fun with this game. I'm pretty sure I'll play more of it as they roll out more content. I'm pretty sure, although it's not, honestly, it's not a guarantee. We'll
You're not
see.
going to
We'll
play this
see.
game ever again. Let's be fair.
We shall see.
And that's
So,
fine.
but there are some things that would make it better that I do want to
Guns.
mention real quick before I get to my actual point review. Guns. I was wanting to play it. I was motivated enough to play it that I thought, like, oh gosh, I wish it was on mobile. I wish it was already on mobile so I could play it on the couch. So yeah, if it was mobile, if you could play it in vertical, if it had a cyberpunk theme, it would all be objectively better,
Oh my
obviously.
God. Wow, that's a lot of truth that you just dropped. That's amazing. That's
So
incredible.
true, so true, so true. So of course, my experience with this game very different because I come from enjoying different genres and playing different types of video games and analog games. And also my scoring system is very different. The points that I assign, because there was a switcheroo.
Wait, when did this happen? We changed the rankings? I don't remember this.
Well, it used to be a stack rank, so let's not
years ago
judge me too harshly on the score, everybody. Bottom line is I gave it a slightly higher score than Slay the Spire 1. 7.8 Andrew points, making my number 24 game right behind Into the Breach, another game with a disappointing final battle.
I'll go next. I gave Slay the Spire 2 maybe like a little bit of a spite score of like an 8.49, just behind Bellatro for me and just ahead of Halls of Torment. Not that like that this game is bad. I think this game is really good, and I think it has a lot of really great potential to it. We just need to wait about a year for it to fully realize that potential. And that's fine. Like that, like it has early access on the label. We all know what we're getting into here. We all know that there's going to be good and bad balance patches along the way. We all know that there's going to be good and bad new character reveals. That's all fine. That's all fine. They'll figure it out. I think all of my criticisms of this game are all things that kind of roll into that, are things that like, you know, like, oh, I don't know, is like the music here like as good as it was in the first one? Well, they're probably saving, like, it's still probably being worked on. It's still being saved for like the real cool bosses that they're really planning to come out with. Some of the build archetypes, I think, like, oh man, I have to go poison as Silent, and if I don't, like, I have no idea how to play that character. Things that, you know, they'll figure out over time, and that's totally okay. But yeah, like the goods here, like the art design, the animation style that they've done here is just fantastic. I think this is exactly what I wanted Slay the Spire 1 to be, and it was worth the wait. Like, I think all of the detail that they've put into stuff is just phenomenal. The co-op mode is really good, not even just for like a fun chaotic experience, but like a learning tool. Like if you're just like coming to the Slay the Spire-verse for the first time, there's gonna be someone out there in your friend network who's played it for 3,000 hours who's like, I will teach you the ropes. Let's jump into a co-op game. It'll be fine. I'll teach you to like to your first victory, and you'll be like, yay, this was fun. Or you could jump into a four-player game and it's just everyone drawing penises on the map, and that's also fun in its own right. The new characters are fun and interesting. I wish that, like, I almost kind of wish the game just launched with like Ironclad, Necrobinder, and the Regent, and like now, like, really forcing you to engage with this kind of new stuff. Like, we know Silent and Defect are good, that's fine, like, but yeah, anyway, I think like the new character stuff that they're doing is cool. And even like for people that have spent 2,000 hours in the first game, like there's still new stuff to figure out, new challenges and things to overcome in this one. The timeline is fun and interesting. Like a big criticism I have of Monster Train 2 is like, oh, it's just like more of the first game. But like this feels like more of the first game in like a good way. where like everything is different. And like it's just, it feels like a good, like, proper sequel that, like, this feels like the Mega Man 2 of the Slay the Spire games. And while it's still in early access, like, that's where I see it going. I can see it being like the definitive Slay the Spire version at the end of the day. And Andrew, to your point, like, this plays great on the Steam Deck, so I think people, when it eventually comes to Nintendo Switch or for phones, I think people are gonna suck another 3,000 hours of their life down that hole. So for me, it's my number, what is this, 24, 25? It's my 24th game on my list. I think mostly just because it's an early access. That's fine. It'll climb up those rankings when we revisit it at some point. And yeah, I can see this being like tied, maybe better than the first one, even, if that's possible for something that's created just a titanic genre, which is extremely hard to do.
I'll go last. Or next, I'll leave Will for last. I'm giving this game a 9.9 plus, where the plus is maybe it could get up to a 10 once they 1.0. Honestly, I think this game is as good or better than Slay the Spire 1, which I gave a 10. It is one of the best games. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like, unlike you two, I find it hard to talk more about this, because it's like, this is a game we've played before, and now it's just like that, but polished better. And it's still mid hone, so we're continuing to forge it into a better and better Slay the Spire blade. So I think, yeah, I mean, it's a great game. It's the best deck builder, and now it's slightly better. So I'll let Will sing the rest of his praises.
Well, if Slay the Spire 1 was the best game and that was a 10 out of 10, and this one's better, then that leads us to the conclusion that this is an 11 out of 10. I don't know if that's going to stand with our rankings and, like, you know, me artificially inflating the score for this. I'm going to go ahead and say it. It's 11 out of 10 because Slay the Spire is the greatest game of all time, and then suddenly you come out with Slay the Spire 2 and it's just better. What am I supposed to do?
I'm so sorry to interrupt.
You're supposed to rank Slay the Spire 1 down.
I can't do that, though.
You have to readjust your whole scale.
I can't. So therefore, we need to make some room on the upper end of the spectrum, and so 11 it is. And yeah, there's just everything is just better. I don't know why I would ever play Slay the Spire 1. That's what it's come down to. It's like,
wow.
Given the it's the end of the day, I put some TNG on, and I'm going to play a game. It's going to be Slay the Spire 2.
I'm so sorry to interrupt, Will. And I know I shouted you down very quickly when you booed me. During the review section is a hallowed holy time where people are supposed to have the floor, but. I'm reeling here. You alluded to, well, I don't know if the score is going to, like, it's so wild. I'm like, well, obviously he gave it a 10 out of 10. Literally, it's not a joke, folks. I'm looking at the Google Doc, 11 out of 10 here. And real quick, so we can fully, we have the full context, a reminder of what Will's definition of a 10 is, that a game, a 10 is revolutionary and novel in a way that no other game before it is. One that demands at least 80 hours of play time while still remaining fun. I can return to these games even now and enjoy myself and have fun. So this is better. And I look forward to seeing what your definition for an 11 game is. Hopefully,
it's obviously beyond that. It takes it to the next level, which we have here. We have animations lining up with combat. We have just so much more in terms of just the overall content of every single thing, cards, enemies, bosses, just story. Everything is just at another level. So I probably will, because you're gonna make me take this down to a 10, but I'm gonna leave it there until you force me.
I'm fine. No, no, no. You guys are always just changing the rules on me for how rankings
work.
No,
I mean, I got to be fair to our
guest.
I understand. But
we'll let you give it a 10.5.
Well, hey.
That's the best I can offer.
But it really, as much as I do have areas of criticism, and I think that this game can be improved. Obviously, it should be improved during this early access period. And I would really love to see unlocks which are more satisfying, which aren't just like you just play the game more and you unlock everything. I don't think that's the best way to do it, and I think the story elements are, you know, they're fine, and some people will like that, but I don't care about that stuff. And the multiplayer, game changing for a lot of people, but for me, I know what I'm doing here, and I don't. It feels like unless you have everyone at the same level. No offense. Unless you have everyone at the same level, it's very difficult to really, I think, get the same appreciation out of a run. So I'm going to say I'm still going to stick with 11, though, because there's just so much more. It's just better in every single dimension. There it is. Best game of all time.
Well, I think in our aggregate rankings, as of 8:36 p.m. on March 27th, it's our currently number one highest ranked game out of 91 games that we've played, largely because of that 11 out of 10. I think for like comedy and for like heartfelt reasons, like I understand the 11 out of 10. The data person in me is screeching as loud as they possibly can.
Hey man, I'm a data guy too. I get
no,
it.
No, you're not.
There you go.
Quit that life.
There you go.
Left it behind.
All right, there you got a 10. You got a 10.
Okay,
That's
all
the
right.
best.
So with a 10, well, with a 10 out of 10, if I have to do this live on the recording because
yeah, resort. Here we go.
Everyone loves data, Excel sheets being resorted live. Currently being edited by another user. I've never seen that before. Oh, okay. Yeah, someone's trying to sort it. I see. All right. So I think Slay the Spire 2, as of 8:37 and 52 seconds on March 27th, is our new number three game of all time out of 91 games that we've played. I think like that feels quite good. Like that feels quite appropriate. It's fresh out of early access. It's a less than a month old game. I could see it being number one. I 100% totally could. I think being anywhere within shouting distance of the top five, like I would basically lump all of our top five games together as like the goats. But I guess like I do have some math under the hood of this Google sheet that like assigns letter rankings to them. And our current only two S tier games are Slay the Spire 1 and Caves of Cud. I don't know if Slay the Spire 2 makes that cut, actually. Here, I'm gonna expose the inner workings here a little bit, and then we'll drag that one down. Well, look at that. All right, our third S tier game.
What's the equation here? What is? I gotta look at the math. Yeah.
Oh, well, God. I'm taking the standard
riveting podcasting here, gentlemen.
Did not know that
G4
is
greater than equal 1.5 S. Okay, I see. So G4.
All right, and the music wrapping up.
All right.
Enter the Gungeon
so
is a
jazz,
B.
Smooth jazz
is a B.
All right. Yeah. See, this is why these columns are hidden, people. Like this is your peek behind the data curtain here. I'm gonna hide these again.
Monster Drain's an A. We got
keep everyone from
broken.
Freaking out here. yeah. So back to our usual segment. Real quick, some similar games here, which I've gotten some feedback of like putting these into like either the podcast description or making these easier to kind of hunt down. I'm looking into ways to do that because otherwise you'd have to like
2 hours of us talk.
You'd have to download the episode and listen to it, and then we would have those download numbers, and we would just start climbing the ranks. I get it. Co-op deck builders. There's not many of them, but there are some on here. We got Across the Obelisk, which, you know, again, these are all inferior products because they're not Slay the Spire, but things to check out. there's I think a very early developed deck builder game that I think has co-op in it called Card Hog that looks very weird and interesting. Colin, I don't know if you've played the board game Eon's End before. Mm-hmm. Developed by former star. I should have written this down. Developed by former pro StarCraft player, designer whose name I forget. Kevin Riley. Jesus, that was it. So former StarCraft pro. What was his name? This episode's going long already. No one's paying attention. QXC. Yeah, everyone remembers the Terran StarCraft 2 player QXC. Leaving StarCraft II Pro Gaming to make Eon's End, which is a similar kind of, well, similar in the sense of like playing cards to defeat basically just one boss, as it were. But that is interesting. Maybe more as a tabletop game, but there is a digital implementation. There's Hell Card, which I think is like a follow up to. There was like this deck builder Diablo based game that we talked about before. I think the Book of Demons. I think it's a sequel to. We got Spell Masons, which is I guess kind of deck building in a way, but that has co-op. Inkbound, I think we mentioned it's not really a deck builder per se, but that, you know, from our Monster Train devs. There's one, Andrew, you'd be interested in this. What if esports was just a coin flip? And you had coin co-op with it. Well, here's a game that's right up your alley called Q, the letter Q dash up, where it is a coin flipping esports parody brought to you by the people who made the Universal Paperclips game.
It looks excellent.
It is quite wild, to put it mildly. And I guess I'll round it out here with some lesser known deck builders that probably need more attention. The game that started it all, the original roguelike deck builder, Dream Quest, still not going on sale, which really makes me mad. I'm not sure if I would Anyway, we got insider trading, we got Rogue Voltage, we got Arcane Eats, who I interviewed in PAX West 2025. Check that out. We got Death Howl, which sounds pretty cool. And then we got Pluto, which is just like, dear God, what is happening in that game? But that's a nice list. Go and check all of those games out. But yeah, that'll finally wind down our Slay the Spire 2 episode. Going long, but well deserved for the sequel to one of the great, the GOAT, our number one on the list. But the sequel being number three is nothing bad to sneeze at, really. And as we wind down here, grogpodzone@gmail.com, send in all those emails about how great our new intro is there. Or Mastodon, grogpod@gamedev.place. I've been, with that specifically, I've been putting up some reviews of games under the hashtag grogpodminis on there, where I've been doing like little mini reviews. People keep, we have a Steam curator, grogpod.zone, go and check it out. Where I, you know, I basically put our reviews here into that. But people send us free games on that, and some of them are real good. Some of them are real bad. The good ones I have on the Grogpod Minis hashtag there on Mastodon. So feel free to peruse some of those. So by all means, if you're looking at our Steam curator and you're like, I want to have these guys review our game, I can't guarantee that we'll get to it at some... Well, it goes in the list. We go with a fine-tooth comb every week. We go through all sorts of data deliberations. We definitely just don't pick a random game 5 minutes before we record and figure out, oh, that's the one that we're going with. Yeah, sure. It's we definitely put a lot more thought into it than that. But yeah, we might get to the game eventually. But grogpod.zone is the website that's got all the stuff. Just go there. That is everything. Just start there and you'll find your way around. Whew. Okay. Slay the Spire 2, it's done. We'll never talk about it ever again.
Tipped ever episode.
Never again. And we've been doing a lot of thinking lately. We've been burning our brain a lot with lots of deep strategy, with lots of writing down, lots of intricate archetypes and things. Will, what's our next extreme brain burner that we have on the docket that's going to like really turn our strategy brains into high gear?
You know what? Megabonk actually is a little bit in that direction. I think there's a lot to be said for the deep strategic decisions to be made in that game, but mostly it is very much an on the fly sort of RTS. Yeah, it's an RTS.
Well, I'm excited to check it out. That was the other game that I didn't quite talk about it before. That when Slay the Spire 2 launched by total number of simultaneous players, obviously Slay the Spire 2 topping the charts, 574,000 players, number two being Elden Ring Night Rain, 313,000 for Rogue games specifically, I should say. But for and actually I wonder what, oh yeah, Megabonk is on here down at like the 1, 2, 3 with, oh, there it is. 117,000 players at peak. Huh. So
insanely fun game. And you know what they do with their unlocks? They gate them behind specific achievements. So I'm just gonna say, I think they got a lot of good ideas there. It's insanely fun game, and I'm really looking forward to reviewing it with y'all.
Well, yeah, I'm excited to play it. I'm excited to bonk things in a mega-like fashion. But playing us out from this week will be some music extracted out of the game, because the official soundtrack is not released yet. But you know, I was gonna go with a waterfall suicide bomber, but in this case, we're gonna go with the ceremonial beast music from Slay the Spire 2 with all of its star twinkling glory as you tear it to shreds.